A Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this unrehearsed news conference. We remind you that their questions are not necessarily a reflection of their point of view, but may be merely their way of getting a story. Now here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is Senator Stuart Symington of Missouri. He is one of the five Democrats most frequently mentioned as possible nominees for president. In the new session of Congress, Senator Symington will play an important role. He has earned a reputation as a critic of administration defense policies, and he is now proposing a program for reorganizing the Defense Department. He is the chairman of an investigating committee, which on Tuesday will begin a far-reaching examination into the operations of the government's farm program. Senator Symington was appointed as the first Secretary of the Air Force when that position was created in 1947. He was first elected to the Senate in 1952. Senator Symington recently returned from an extensive trip, which included Africa and the Middle East. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Senator Symington, are Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Roscoe Drummond of the New York Herald Tribune, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Senator, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Senator, I'd like to assume what everyone else in the political know takes for granted, and that is that you're being seriously advanced for the Democratic presidential nomination. And I'd like to ask you some questions on some of the major issues that face us. First, the question of disarmament. While the rest of the world is talking about and hoping for disarmament, you keep hammering away on the question of armament. Will you tell us where you stand on the question of disarmament?
Mr. Spivak, in 1955, I introduced a resolution which was passed unanimously by the Senate. And the resolution was one of universal disarmament. Nobody could be more for disarmament than I am. On the other hand, I believe it would be wrong and not in the best interest of my country to disarm unilaterally in the face of growing communist strength.
Senator, do you think we can make any kind of disarmament agreement with the Soviet Union today that would be safe for the free world?
Well, I'd hope with it that we could, and I think it's important that we continue to try. But on the other hand, I think that we have to do two things. First, work for general disarmament, and secondly, be careful that in our desire to obtain a real disarmament agreement, we don't sign one that might leave us in a position where it could be violated without our knowing it.
Senator, specifically on nuclear weapons testing, we've carried on negotiations now for over a year. And the Russians seem to be getting exactly what they want, and that is a test ban without inspection. How long would you continue these negotiations if they continue in this present vein?
For 14 months, we haven't been testing. And for 14 months, the Russians have not been testing. It worries me a great deal because as the months go by, our experts say continuously that we cannot tell increased size tests on their part if they want to cheat. I am willing to leave this matter in the hands of the president, who says that he has now abandoned the idea of just agreeing to an indefinite extension. I would hope that we reach an agreement soon, because the American people should realize that the longer it is that we have no agreement and yet do not test, the longer, provided the Russians are cheating, the longer we are giving up and therefore, in effect, disarming unilaterally.
You think, then, that if we don't get an agreement soon, that we ought to go back at least to underground testing?
I do think we ought to go back to underground testing, yes.
Well,
Mr. Drummond.
Senator, just one more
if
aspect.
If I may interrupt Mr. Drummond to say that is provided in the reasonably distant future, we don't get an agreement that we consider the right agreement.
To touch on one more aspect of the test ban thing, in your judgment and in your knowledge, is there any method of verification that would be adequate to detecting underground testing.
And Mr. Drummond, the amount of blast that could be detected has increased, to my certain knowledge, in the minds of the experts 20 times in the last year. Now we're talking underground. In addition to which, there is a great new field of testing where there is a growing apprehension that we would not be able to detect, and that's the field of space. For example, something that was tested halfway to the moon. Therefore, again, I say that all of us are looking towards peace and believe that the best way to get peace is through some form of agreement in this field and all the fields of armament.
Well,
on the other hand, I do think that based on the record that we have to proceed with care.
Speaking of space, former President Truman and Senator Mansfield this afternoon said that they thought that the Soviet use of the Pacific for rocket testing was an act of arrogance. Now, I'd like to ask whether you think the Pacific is a proper area for rocket launching, and what do you believe is the purpose of the proposed Soviet rocket test?
Well, without getting into too much into possibly classified territory, I think it shows that fairly soon, based on the orbit they get in the place that they now plan to test, fairly soon they plan to put a man in space. Where they plan to throw these missiles now is about 1,100 miles from Pearl Harbor. They're getting closer in their relationships in the space field to our newest state. They're not, however, nearly as close, perhaps, as they are in some other places in the world where the governments appear to be leaning their way.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator, the President gave us a rather optimistic picture of our defense in his State of the Union message. Does that agree with your knowledge of our military position?
No, Mrs. Craig. I think the President was misinformed in some of the things that he told the American people with respect to our defenses.
Well, for instance, he spoke of our Atlas situation. How many ready intercontinental missiles do we have? Do you know?
Yes, I do know,
ready?
But I don't think I should say so on this program. I do think, however, that his statement as to what our position was oversanguine.
Well, could you give us some idea then, perhaps in relation to what you know of what the Russians have?
It's been acknowledged by this administration a year ago, after we corrected some of the statements that were made by some officials, it was acknowledged, admitted, that the plan was to allow the Russians to get a lead of 3-1. That's what they said the lead would be. Personally, I feel that the plans mean that their lead will be greater than 3-1. And inasmuch as we have not deviated from our announced plans by the Secretary of Defense at that time, it should be clear to all Americans that we are farther behind than we were a year ago in the defense missile field.
The President was rather optimistic about the Polaris nuclear subs. How many of them do we have ready?
Well, I wouldn't want to give the exact figures, but I do agree with you that he was misinformed with respect to the statements he made about that weapon also.
Well, if he isn't informed, who misinformed him?
Well, I would, if I was in his position, I'd be interested in finding out.
Well, Senator, that's an extraordinary statement to say that the President, the Commander-in-Chief, is misinformed and doesn't know what he's talking about.
I didn't say the latter. You did. I did say that I felt that I was sure that he would have been misinformed in some of the statements he made.
Does it not follow, if he's misinformed, that he doesn't know what he's talking about?
You made that statement, not I.
Senator, could you cite a specific example of where he was misinformed?
Well, Mrs. Craig brought up two. One was in the in what he said about the missiles, and the other was what he said about the Polaris submarines.
Mr. Childs.
Well, just to push that a moment further, Senator, how long can the American public take this screen of security that I noticed you referred to classified information. Shouldn't the public know if the president's misinformed, and isn't it your duty to tell us?
Well, Mr. Childs, in our form of government, one in a position like mine, a senator from Missouri, has to be very careful about releasing classified information. However, I want to say this. The American people now know from this administration that we are well behind in the missile field, even farther behind in the space field, and that our plans are to remain that way and get worse. Now, I'm amazed that the president, in his statement, points out that we're going to have the most prosperous year in our history next year, that we're going to have a $4.5 billion surplus. And at the same time, these plans to let the Russians continue their relative growing strength against ours continue. And I'd like to just also say that I don't argue about the fact that under our form of government, they have the right to consider the balancing of the budget more important than national security. But I do think that it's unfortunate that the people are not given the facts as to the nature of their actions to that end and the degree that we are falling behind.
Well, I'd like to ask you about that surplus, too, Senator. I gather you would not use that to reduce the national debt, that $4 billion, too, if such a surplus does materialize. Is that right?
I don't think there is anything more important in the world today than this country, the last great bastion against communism, keeping equal in strength with the Russians, physically, economically, technologically, psychologically, and of course we certainly believe spiritually. Therefore, unless they want to reorganize the Department of Defense to wring out the waste over there that everybody knows is there and get a new setup, which I am introducing a bill on as soon as I can get the floor, you might say, and unless they want to correct some of the other places in government where we are not having good administration and get the money that way, I most certainly would take that excess that the president talks of, that surplus that he talks of, and put it into increasing our defenses.
But don't you then lay yourself open to the charge of being a spender and willing to unbalance the budget and contribute to our inflation?
I don't think that whether we balance the budget or many of our other plans will mean much in this world unless we maintain our guard. Nobody wants peace in the world more than I do. Nobody wants peace more than any citizen with common sense. Your only problem is, as we move to the summit next May, for example, with the great psychological, technological, and physical accomplishments recently of the Soviet, do you have a better chance to negotiate that just and lasting peace we hope for at the summit, for example, if you negotiate from a position of relative weakness or one of relative strength? To me, that's the most important avenue to peace that we have in the world today.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator, you said that there was a great deal of waste in the Defense Department. Am I to understand then that if you were President of the United States, you wouldn't spend more for defense, that you really would spend less for defense?
I'd spend more for defense right now. But on the other hand, I'd have a single war plan. I'd try, I would hope, eliminate the constant bickering and arguing and differences between the services by having a single chief of staff. I'd have a single war plan. I'd downgrade the secretaries to undersecretaries under the Secretary of Defense so as to build up his authority, and I'd have a transfer in grade. In other words, I'd run the situation on the basis of good business practice instead of letting it drift the way it is today in tradition.
Now, Senator, when you speak of waste in the Defense Department, is that just a generalized charge, or do you know pretty specifically that there is sizable waste and that something could be done about it?
Well, Mr. Spivak, you know that. You could name item after item because of the disagreements has been canceled or held back, started and stopped. Things like the Bullmark, things like the Seamaster, the Navajo. Here we are today canceling hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of development and research items because each service is being allowed to try to fight the next war by itself.
Well, Senator, in fact, isn't the whole Defense Department a wasteful Defense Department as long as it keeps us at in peace? Isn't there constant obsolescence? I mean, don't you have to research and maybe waste money in research?
Well, that's true. That's true, of course. But on the other hand, there's no reason why the organizational setup shouldn't be on a basis where the taxpayer gets the most return for his dollar. And in answer to the way you asked the question in the beginning, I would immediately start spending more. For example, in the space field, the degree that we're behind in thrust is almost incredible. And yet last year, we cut by tens of millions of dollars the one big thrust program that we had, the Saturn. I'd spend money quick there, and I'd accelerate these important programs, and I'd modernize SAC. On the other hand, I also would attempt to streamline that department so that as soon as possible you'd beginning to get true defense for your dollar.
Senator, you've spent a great many years studying defense. Have you any idea how much you could save and how much you would spend if you were the president?
Well, I think you could save, and I'm on the record of having said that I thought you could save 30% of the budget. That's when I was pretty close to the department. If that was only half right today, you'd save $100 million a week.
Mr. Drummond.
Senator, on this program last Sunday, Senator Kennedy said that if any Democratic leader was unwilling to submit his candidacy to the test of a representative primary, that that Democratic leader would not deserve well of the next national convention. I'd like to ask whether you share that view.
Mr. Drummond, some time back, when some of my friends in New Hampshire asked me if I would go into that primary, I had to make a decision. Namely, would I go into primaries or would I not? Now, I know something about primaries. I was in a primary once for 7 months, I believe, and I was in it 7 days a week. My state doesn't have presidential primaries. Only about a third of the states do have presidential primaries. And less than 10% of the states have presidential primaries that are binding. Anybody can have their own ideas as to the importance of primaries.
You think primaries
I have
should
decided,
be abolished?
I have decided not to go into any primaries, at least at this time. And as to whether they should be abolished or not, I wouldn't want to criticize anything that another state had set up. In my state, we don't happen to have it. And in two-thirds of the states, they don't happen to have primaries.
Mrs. Craig.
Senator, Cuba is only 90 miles from Florida. Do you think that the present government of Cuba is under communist influence dangerous to us?
Mrs. Craig, I have it on good authority that communist influence in Cuba is growing steadily, and I know that those people in our government who should be worrying about it are very worried indeed. As you say, it is 90 miles from the United States, and that's getting pretty close. It also has one of the world's greatest naval bases at Guantanamo, and of course anything that they're doing there could be supplied by submarines anyway.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you believe that there are submarines hiding on the Cuban coast now?
I have heard that, but I haven't heard it from a position or from somebody that I could answer your question formally.
Do you think there are missile bases there?
I'd rather not comment on that question, frankly.
Mr. Childs.
Senator, getting back to this matter of politics, I checked up a few figures and found that you'd traveled in the fall 32,000 miles and spoken in 22 states. I wonder if it would be fair to call you an active but an unavowed candidate. Would that be?
Well, first, let me answer this way, if I might. In 1958, I had another decision to make also, and that was, did I go out of my state or did I not? and I decided not to go out of Missouri, and I didn't during the entire year. Many of my colleagues and many other good Democrats came in to help me. Therefore, when I'm asked to go around and help the Democratic Party at fundraising dinners and others, well, I do. Now, specifically answering your question, I'm not actively seeking delegates at this time. I am interested in the general subject.
I'd like to ask you about another unavowed candidate, if I may use that phrase. When we had Governor Brown on this program, he was asked about Senator Lyndon Johnson. And he said he thought he would have a handicap in the North because of oil and gas and the integration issue. I wonder if you would agree with that, Senator.
I think that a man could only speak for his own state. In my state, where Senator Johnson talked recently and met with the leaders, he had a great deal of support.
You believe he could carry Missouri, let's say?
Well, he can certainly carry Missouri over any Republican.
Does this mean, Senator, that you don't think the North-South division in your party is important and you could nominate a Southerner to run for President of the United States?
I don't think there is a North-South division in my party. Only once has the South left the party since I've been reasonably active in politics. In that case, President Truman still won the nomination and the election. And I would hope that geography wouldn't play too prominent a part or be a decisive matter in the choosing of a president. I would hope, the way the world is today, that the United States as a country stay together and that we pick the best man for the job, regardless of where he lives. I think never more true was this statement of Benjamin Franklin's as we watch this situation, as I've noticed it over the world in recent weeks. If we don't all hang together now, we're going to hang separately.
Wasn't that Patrick Henry?
I think it was Benjamin Franklin.
Senator, Mr. Spivak.
You said you're not a candidate for the presidential nomination, but will you tell us whether you'd like to be president in 1960?
I certainly would like to be president in 1960. Mm-hmm. I think anybody in politics would like to be president in 1960. It's going to be a rough job, but the way things are going now, I would hope that we could put a break and turn this country on the right keel from the standpoint of making us strong so that we can stay free. Let me emphasize, by strength, I don't mean just physical strength. I mean all the other strengths. I believe the one way that we can assure a peace in the world is for the United States and its allies to get together and remain strong.
Senator, I'd like to ask you another question, which I hope you won't consider a too personal question, but your critics are saying that you are all things to all men, and are able, therefore, to get equally strong support from groups in sharp controversy with each other. The segregationists and the anti-segregationists, labor and capital, conservatives and liberals. How do you answer that charge that has been made against you, and it has been made as a charge against you?
Well, first, Mr. Spivak, they don't say it to me. And secondly, I know of no issue that I haven't voted on and taken a position on. And I think the charge is totally unwarranted. My voting record, I believe, proves it. And I naturally am sorry that people say it. There's no justification, no proof of any kind for it. And I regret that some people have said it.
Well, Senator, do you think that it is necessarily bad for you to be endorsed by the ADA and to be a favorite of the Chamber of Commerce, for example? This is, for example, from Harper's. He is at home with the ADA, and he is far from unwelcome at the same time at the luncheon of the Chamber of Commerce. Another one from New York Post. He can also apparently persuade liberals that he's a chip off the New Deal bloc and conservatives that he is as solid as a Hoover dollar.
One of the last things my father-in-law said to me before he died, and he was a great American as well as a great senator, was that politics was not a science. It was an art. It was the art of getting along with people. I do my best to get along with as many people as I can. Never once has that changed my convictions on an issue.
Mr. Drummond.
Senator, recently two political people, Governor Rockefeller and Senator Kennedy, have made it clear that they simply wouldn't consider having anything to do with the vice presidential nomination. I'm not going to ask whether you'd accept a vice presidential nomination, because I think nearly everybody could know the answer. What I want to ask you is, do you think that either party ought to nominate a vice presidential candidate who is not qualified to be the presidential nominee?
I do not.
Do you think that there is much prospect that either party will do that?
I would hope not, Mr. Drummond. Naturally, you know, the vice presidential decision is one that's generally made, you might say, quote, at the last minute. On the other hand, I would hope that the vice president of the United States next time is a man who is fully capable, the way the world is, of being a good president.
I think with that future in mind, Senator, I'll have to call a halt to the proceedings. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Senator Symington, for being with us.
And modest thanks to Senator Stuart Symington of Meet the Press, who was the guest of